Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Hello, hello, hello. Is everybody out there? Anybody listening?
We're here, Paul.
We are back on the air this week, and you know, I'm going to start off with Ride This because I thought I had a cool name. You know, I thought for years and years I fought the pronunciation of it as being Rad because it really isn't. It's R O D. It's less like our R O D Rod, but you know, people keep wanting to call me Rad, and then when we did the radio show, I gave up and I said, okay, fine, it's the Rad Life.
It's Rad. It's
which,
radical.
Which I'm going to out myself. I feel really, really bad about because I don't surf and I live in San Clemente. And when somebody says Rad to me, I think surf culture, and so you know, I feel like a fake with a double with an extra A in my name, right? But I thought I had a cool name. Now I want to know what is Harley origin? I mean, I think motorcycle. I think
rev me up. Introduce him first.
But I'm very excited to have this guy in the studio today. I've been trying to get him in for about a couple of months, and I'm excited about what he's doing. And we have joint common friends that you know any friend of Laura Ottman's, I'm going to give her a shout out, is a friend of mine. So in studio today, I have a gentleman that is making waves. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say.
In Orange County, and it is Mr. Harley Ruda, who is running for the 45th Congressional?
48th.
48th Congressional.
Yes.
Who's running for the 45th? Why did I say 45th?
Katie Porter.
Katie Porter is running for the 45th. That's right. She's doing a great job, by the way, getting her name out there. Ooh, yeah. If you haven't noticed, there's a sort of an election season coming.
No, a big one.
And somebody keeps telling me that California may be,
the linchpin.
Yeah. You know, blue wave. We're kind of sick and tired. We're not taking it anymore. We're going to kind of make our own destiny a little bit. And there's some really cool candidates that are very qualified that are running, of which one is sitting right in front of me today. So, Harley, thank you for being at the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here. And do you want to know the story on how
I do? I do.
All right. Well, I am the youngest of four, including three boys.
Okay.
And my dad's name is Harley. And all we could figure out that when I was born, my mom must have been pissed off at my dad and decided to name me Harley.
So you basically, you know, what is it? The sins of the father?
Exactly.
You're basically carrying the... Okay.
Does it come from anywhere, though? Because that's not a name.
Well, now you've said it's a family
it's
name.
English.
So.
It's English.
Okay.
And my dad's mother came from England, and that's how the name got brought into the family.
That's awesome. Actually, I like that. I think it's kind of important to have a legacy and continuation. So, I mean,
so wait a minute.
My oldest son is named Harley as well.
So there you go.
Yeah, there it is.
So that's perfect.
So wait a minute now. So you're telling me that we have a couple of immigrants or near immigrants in the room here? I don't know. We got enough of those. I don't
immigrants here in the United States, except for the Native Americans.
Yeah. Paul, you're an immigrant from Michigan.
Yeah, I am.
Right? So I mean,
that's
you're
like
an
another
too.
Country.
It is. So you keep telling me your friends look like they're from another country. Harley, give people a little bit of background on you, because you're a pretty accomplished man, and you know, at some point I'm going to ask you what made you want to jump into this with all those accomplishments, right? But seriously, I mean, first of all, kudos to you. Honestly, we need more people that are just willing to be out there for public service and really put themselves out there, and you know, we are always better for people that step up. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
And why don't we give the listeners a little bit of background?
The quick background is I was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, and as I mentioned, the youngest of four.
Uh-oh, you're going to have to leave now. I'm a University of Michigan grad.
Yeah, I thought that might come up. You know, go Bucks.
And, Ouch.
But raised in Columbus, Ohio, my dad was a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He was a guy that started a real estate company with an old door resting on two sawhorses in the basement of his first home.
Wow.
And all the kids worked in the business growing up, eventually went away to college, and then I went to law school. I practiced law with a large regional law firm for quite some time.
Okay.
And my dad didn't really realize when I was younger he didn't have a succession plan, so the idea of going to work for my dad didn't seem like a good idea. But as I matured, I realized he did not have a succession plan. So I came back to work for him, realized the real estate industry was ripe for consolidation due to this thing called the internet.
Yes.
Hired a couple people from CompuServe to build a really cool technology platform that allowed us to grow it into a one of the largest companies in the country in that space in real estate. And did that with my wife, who's always, we've been working side by side in just about every endeavor. We've been married 28 years and
congratulations.
Have four incredible kids.
Congratulations. And I understand that your wife has her own claim to fame as well.
Yeah, she's the brains in the family. She's a international bestseller, yeah. Author of novels.
So shout out to her as well.
Novels did she? I didn't know she wrote novels. What is she?
She does her book out right now is called Best Day Ever, and okay. It's Kara Ruda, and it's an international release and doing great.
I'll have to look that up. And how did you get to California from Columbus?
We got to California from Columbus because one of the companies we created was called Real Living, which was a national real estate franchise company. And we sold it to a company called Brookfield, based mm-hmm. out of Toronto, Canada. They had bought the GMAC real estate network about a year and a half before.
Is that Brookfield Homes? Or no?
That is one of their subsidiaries.
One of their subsidiaries.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. So we merged GMAC and Real Living. I came on board to merge those two companies together. And then Brookfield acquired Prudential Real Estate Network, mm-hmm. which was located in Irvine.
Right.
And we consolidated all of the
To your point, it was that ripe time for consolidation in the
exactly.
industry. So you've been how long have you been in, would you say, Orange County or Southern California?
About 10 years.
10
now.
Years.
Yep.
Okay. And what made you, with all the successes behind you, right, actually you want to jump into this political thing? That we basically all like look at and say, that's
Why?
A crazy circus going
this
on.
Nut, this craziness.
Without a ringmaster, you know.
Yeah, there's a couple stories behind that. My wife's story is that she kicked me out of the house to go run for office. But the reality is that, you know, I thought about running for office when I was younger. And with the great real estate recession that began in 2008, all focus was on maintaining the business and saving the jobs that
sure.
were connected with that business. And 2016, the election of Trump, for me, was a watershed event.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just because
of, I shed a lot of water on
yeah,
it, as we talk
yeah.
in the show all the time here, yeah.
But for me, you know, it wasn't just about Trump. It was really about the fact that our country was talking about personalities instead of issues. And it was all partisan. There was no willingness to yeah. reach across the aisle and put country first, party second.
And by the way, thank you for outlining it like that, because we do tend to be tribalistic. And for those of us that are not really, I mean, we tongue in cheek and joke and laugh, mm-hmm. and you know, that's nature of politics, if you will,
right.
like the sport element of it. But it's really true. We have become so polarized, we have become so extremes, and it becomes a culture, you know, what do they call it? A cult of personalities. It's not
right.
really issue based. It's not really qualifications based.
Right.
Right.
And even worse is we demonize the other side. This is what I talk about all the time.
It's
bad enough that I don't like your politics or I don't agree with you on economic theory or whatever it is. But when I think you're evil, I can't compromise with evil anymore. You're evil. I've got to stomp you out of whatever I can do. And when both sides start demonizing each other, how are we ever going to come together?
Exactly. You won't get the country's work done when you won't talk to each other. And most
right.
Americans are between the 20-yard lines. Most Americans
exactly.
recognize we have more in common than what separates us, and we need politicians who are willing to focus
well,
on
we
that.
Well, and we didn't get there all of a sudden in 2016.
No.
This was building. And it sort of culminated in this format. So again, it's not a matter of demonizing. It's a matter of recognizing that we have a major issue that isn't working.
Right.
And that we need to go back to a little bit more of a practicality approach of basically looking at issues versus, you know, blind loyalties, looking at personalities, but not only in terms of qualifications. And actually encouraging, you know what, the other thing that really kills me is we have somehow got into this fix that we basically don't encourage people to be involved in public service.
True.
Like you're either in or you're not, and if you actually are foolish enough to be too young to know better and want to stick your head into there and basically try to be of service to others and you know, improve the situations. And I'm reminded by guests of mine that are going to be on the show in a couple of weeks that are the Orange County students for city council, that they're running like five candidates in different cities now.
Mm-hmm.
There's all like 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kids. I mean, I talk about a future is bright when I see
exactly.
something like this. That should be encouraged, not basically stepped on or discouraged. So,
but we live in a world where we're trashing the notion of service. I was struck when I saw John McCain's funeral, and I think John McCain was an honorable, decent guy. I did not vote for him, but I think we've lost something, and I think that's what everybody got out of that, where that notion of service supersedes everything else. He certainly served his country well. He certainly gave everything for it. And at his funeral, both sides could come together and honor and recognize that. And we almost seemed like it was quaint, like that was a bygone era.
So was that part of it for you, Harley? Did you feel that, you know, the draw to politics was kind of being of service of that nature? I mean, what's in it for you?
Is corny as this sounds, it is to
corny
serve the greater
good.
It is to serve the greater good. And I truly believe all of us, regardless of what our political beliefs are, need to be engaged in the political discussion, just as our founders wanted us to do.
We're better for it.
Yes. And you can't take your ball and walk off the court if you, the person you're talking to, has a different viewpoint than you.
Right.
That's the opportunity to talk and try and understand the viewpoint of the other individual. Try and find out where the commonality is, and then build off the commonality instead of looking for the differences and then walking away.
And are you telling me that in the district that you're running for, that's not happening?
Well,
surely you jest.
You know, it's a challenge, and I think if you look at the broader reasons as to why the country has become so polarized, you can look to a few different things. One is gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. Gerrymandering, we're fortunate here in California that we have an independent commission that has set up the districts here. But in most of the country, gerrymandering is alive and well. Mm-hmm. And what happens with gerrymandering is you end up with intensely Democratic or intensely Republican districts.
Right.
So that the only people who can win in those districts are the people that are to the furthest right or left, as the case may be. And so you don't get moderates. You get people, again, at the extremes.
And you get this peculiar thing where the minority can rule.
Exactly.
As in Pennsylvania, I think Pennsylvania was the one that was tossed out recently here in North Carolina. Both of them, they're contesting. The courts are deciding whether they should impose something. I don't remember the exact specifics of it. But what I recall is in Pennsylvania in particular, Republicans, for example, in that state, were a minority, but were able to hold a majority of seats by drawing them such that they were mostly Republican base seats. They forced all the Democrats into a few seats and then spread out the Republicans over a bunch of seats.
That's the whole idea behind gerrymandering. But when you overlay that with two other things, and that is Citizens United from 2010,
yes,
that allowed so much dark money, soft money to come in, that then plays into these fringe elements in these gerrymandered districts. And then the third thing that plays into this,
especially ironic when we've been talking about campaign finance reform forever,
right?
And then here comes this,
and it gets worse. And then the third thing that plays into this is social media. You know, social media has provided echo chambers for all of us to have our viewpoint continually validated and shutting off any type of discourse with other individuals who could help broaden our view, our understanding, and our discussion.
Yeah, I can isolate myself in my own echo chamber and not really
be
forced. And this notion of alternative universe with alternative truths. You watch one cable channel, and you get one, this is absolutely the truth, and then the other one says, no, that's absolutely wrong.
Well,
social media is the same way. And I'm sorry to say that the medium that I grew up in and worked in for a number of years, traditional radio, that's one of the reasons I created this independent internet radio station. Live podcasting is, it's supposed to be streaming screaming.
But you know what, Paul, it's equally manipulatable.
Have to consciously try not to.
The word, right? Forever and ever, even when it was just information through newspapers, you could still read one newspaper and find yourself in an echo chamber.
Clearly.
The person who is genuinely interested in doing what you're talking about, Harley, which is basically being open to the other point of view, to be actually, you know, you can always look at it and set it aside, but to actually allow yourself to have the courage to look at all points of views, you could do that with multiple newspapers. You could collect four or five newspapers and get different editorials and different content. Same thing with this. I think that the interesting thing is, that requires engagement. That requires a personal commitment to actually engage and get involved. If you are just lazily looking for that soundbite,
that reinforces what you already believe.
That's always going to be the case, right?
So
you, here you are. You jump into this race. You're activated, or you know, the watershed moment of 2016, right? We're 2018. So what happens between 2016 and 2018?
a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm. So how do you go about it? I mean, what was sort of that?
Well, the rest of the story is, so that's what energized me to explore getting involved.
Okay.
And the first thing I did was, you know, my wife and I talked with our kids, made sure that everybody was on board with this notion. We also spoke with some activists in the area to get their support.
Yeah, it's not a small decision.
No, it's not. And then most importantly, we talked to leaders of the Democratic Party of Orange County, because mm-hmm. if they had somebody sitting on the bench who right. wanted to run for the seat, right. I would have supported them 100%. But they did not have anybody. They encouraged me to run. So double-checked with the family, all in, jump in, go back to the Democratic Party of Orange County, and asked one of the leaders there, okay, I'm all in. Where's the game plan, the playbook? And they said, we don't have a playbook. And that made me think of the old adage from Will Rogers when asked, you know, what party do you belong to? He said, I don't belong to an organized party. Yeah, I'm a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat.
And it was certainly, you know, a feeling of that. It was like I didn't know what next step to take.
And is that simply because this has for so long been a Republican district and a Republican county? Or is it just because you're up against somebody who's been so entrenched? How long is how long?
30
is
years.
30 years he's been serving.
I think it's
Congress,
both. Yeah. I think it's both because I think.
Or is it a wider symptom?
Well, I'm not sure. It's not a wider symptom because you know the parties, local parties are. It's a bit of a catch-22. They're strong because the people who hold offices are strong,
uh-huh.
and they hold those offices, the majority of them. So the stronger the party becomes, the more likely they are to hold more offices. And certainly in Orange County, it's been a challenge over the years for the Democratic Party to establish itself in seats both locally and state.
Let me rephrase the question, only just to get it off the table. Is there an issue of you know, like, what's the word? Preparing potential candidates within the party, building that stable of potential people that could run, or is it something which is sort of maybe a symptom of both parties, where once you have somebody in office, you basically, they're just in office and they're incumbent, and they basically, you know, the argument is, because I'm all for example, term limits. I'm all for term limits. But every time I say that, and I said if I ever run for anything, I would run on one term and never seek. Now, you want to basically come back and say, no, we're going to write you in or whatever, that's fine. But I'm not going to basically seek it. And the reason is because then it allows somebody else to basically come in and basically be of service. But the response I get from people is like, well, by the way, if we invested to get you in there, then why would we invest to do that if you're going to basically not run again? So it's an interesting dilemma. And I'm wondering whether parties themselves are building that next generation of candidates, or is it something where it requires somebody like you who just steps up and says, hey, do you have anybody? If not, I'm going to run.
Yeah, it's certainly a combination of both. And
I'm not picking on the Democratic Party, by the way. I'm saying, is it the nature of the political system?
No, I do think the political system is set for people to start in certain positions and work their way up as vacancies open up.
Okay.
That's just a given regardless of party. But there is also a chilling effect for certain offices where somebody has held it for so long. And that's a case in point here.
Yeah,
we have
30 years.
An incumbent who's had it for 30 years, and he's won by wide margins.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually every 2 years. So to have somebody knock them off, it's probably not somebody you have on the bench. It's somebody new and different who's going to step forward and put on a campaign that really challenges them.
No, that's an interesting take on it. I didn't really, to be honest with you, think about it that way, but you probably have there's a lot of truth to that. With that being said, what do you think, what are you bringing to the table that you feel is going to be making that difference? Like, I mean, you have somebody who's an incumbent for 30 years. Obviously, they have a strong presence and base.
Right.
The timing, of course, is an interesting added factor
right.
here, right, in 2018. But what, I mean, we obviously have issues. You know,
right.
we're an aging community, we're aging county, we've got increase in elderly, we've got homeless issues. You know, there's a lot of stuff that impacts these technically affluent neighborhoods, right? To a certain extent, people are dealing with issues, and to a certain extent, to be honest with you, I think they're just putting their heads in the proverbial sand and just kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, I think most people right now, they just want decency and rational, logical people back in politics. And that's why there's such a great difference between me and Dana Rohrabacher. And just to cite a few different areas.
Please.
Dana does not believe in climate change being driven by humankind. and yet 97% of the accredited scientists in the world recognize this as the greatest issue facing humankind long term. Yep. And I, on the other hand, not only believe it, I also think it's an opportunity for us to embrace clean tech, clean energy industries of today and tomorrow.
Future industries, yeah.
Right here in Southern California, yep, to create jobs. So that's one. Two, from a local standpoint, he believes homelessness is a lifestyle issue. It's not a lifestyle issue. These are people
couldn't agree with you more.
Are down on their luck or are facing physical or mental challenges that are being inadequately addressed.
Yep.
He is on record as saying home sellers should not have to sell their homes to gays and lesbians. That is not only against California law, it's against common decency.
Mm-hmm.
So completely out there. His positions on Russia and receiving checks from convicted felon Paul Manafort, meeting with Russian spies, being the only member of Congress under investigation by Mueller, and supposedly having a code name from the Kremlin. I do not have a code name from the Kremlin. There's a big difference there between the two of us. You know, the list of differences between where he stands and shows how extreme he has become and how distant he has become from the basic levels, basic understanding of what the constituents want here in the 48th District provides a clear difference. And I'll give you one more. And
sure.
This is the one that I can give you many more, but the one where Baron Cohen on Showtime had him on record supporting the training and arming of school children to defend schools against school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back and said, well, I didn't say kindergartners. He qualified and said, I was talking about high school students, and I would train and arm high school students, but I would only have a limited number of guns in the school available. That's what he said. That shows you how out of touch he is. I mean, to walk back your comments to that is your idea of what is right to protect
our
schools?
Well, that's not even a well-put-together plan. I mean, just something like you basically just threw together because you need to come up with an answer.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm even giving them credit. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. I'm trying to basically piece the pieces together. They don't pencil out.
Exactly.
Even if you did that, like, why would you limit the numbers if the whole point is to... I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So, okay... And I'm going to go there only because, again, part of our political system has been, vote for me, I'm not the other guy. Okay?
Right.
And that's not enough.
You're right.
So I agree with you, and thank you for outlining that, because that's important to basically put out there. What do you bring to the job, and how does it fit into the current needs of your district and overall what we are facing as in maybe a county, and because there's a repetitive nature of issues that are not limited to one district or the other. And you know, we are California, and there are certain realities that we deal with that maybe not, another state doesn't. Harley, what do you bring to the table that is going to be something we look forward to as not just a change from Dana, but we can actually get behind?
Sure. Several things. First of all, just being on the issues, where I am on the issues, mm-hmm, versus him. And we touched about that a little bit.
Absolutely.
When it comes to environment. Also, I do not support offshore drilling, which he supports. And I have a comprehensive plan for making sure that college education is affordable and accessible, because we have to have
the
smartest kids in the world if we,
yep,
want to win on the global stage when it comes to attracting businesses and, mm-hmm, and creating good jobs. I have a detailed plan on how to address gun violence. And I respect the Second Amendment, but I also believe in what Justice Scalia said, and that is the rights under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are not absolute rights. They are limited rights. You do not have the right under the Second Amendment to carry any gun anytime, anywhere you want. And we can have reasonable, logical legislation to help prevent gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
Most Americans support it, including, mm-hmm, most members of the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get there without having politicians who are in the pocket of the NRA preventing that common sense legislation from happening.
Would you agree with me that it's almost ironic, because it almost sounds like there's no money in common sense anymore?
Well, that's part of the problem with the dark soft money that we talked about earlier,
right,
that puts too many politicians, yeah, in the pocket of corporate interest, and
right,
and we've got to overcome that. And then one other thing that I'm committed to that Dana Rohrabacher will not do, and that is meet with his constituents.
Mm.
I have consistently for over a year and a half now since campaigning, having town halls, meeting with people, understanding their concerns, understanding what's important to them, understanding what solutions they want to see to the issues that are important to them. Yet Dana Rohrabacher has not had one public town hall in that entire time. In fact, he hasn't had one for years and years. And to go further, in Congress, you've got an obligation to work. And he has he has only had three bills with his name on it passed in 30 years. Most recently, 14 years ago. He's not working for the constituents of the 48th district. He's not working for America.
Okay, so let's say you the election's over, you win, you're in there. What are some of the visions that you have for us?
For us in America as a whole?
Well, yeah. You know what? All news is local, right? So
right.
Start local, because I think obviously whatever it is will be driven by the same basic instincts that would apply elsewhere. I mean, there's, you know, leaving things better than you found them, taking care of issues, things, you know, being available, being reachable, all this stuff. Given all that, what are some of the things that you might be, like, just excited about that you think would be timely, that would be applicable to improving everybody's lives or whatever it is that maybe what drives you once you are in that seat?
First of all, I recognize that, you know, going to Congress and recognizing that Congress is not the most functional place in the country right now and that things move slowly.
Surely you jest.
but even, you know, not having a Pollyannish viewpoint on it, I also recognize that there are opportunities.
Sure, there is. Always.
And Representative Scott Peters said to me early on when he was helping support our campaign, he made it clear that, you know, there's a lot of things, whether it's in business or local politics, where you can make changes that move very quickly.
Sure.
In our big changes for those folks. In Congress, your changes tend to be smaller but affect a vast array of people across our country. So I'm focused on making sure, again, that I'm working with the constituents of the 48th District to address their issues. And I've also made commitments. One of the biggest commitments I've made is to sign the Equality Act the first chance I get in Congress. And a lot of people may say, well, why the Equality Act?
Right.
Why is that important to you? Well, when I look at the conduct of our president in trying to divide us, and in specifically citing folks as Rohrabacher has that are in the LGBTQ community, to me it's important to put a stake in the ground that says no longer are we going to support politicians who divide our country. What's made our country great is our diversity, and I'm committed to signing the Equality Act on day one. And there's so many other opportunities to work together across the aisle. I think that's the biggest thing that I'm committed to doing is making sure that working with problem solvers that are willing to put country first, party second, find out again where we are between the 20-yard lines, fight for what you believe in,
right.
But ultimately compromise for the good of the country.
What are some, you said you've met with people and constituents and you've listened to what their issues are and what, you know, what they would like to see happen. Can you share some of that, like some of the things that stick with you?
Sure. I think, you know, there's national issues that are consistent across our country.
Well, let's take it local first.
Exactly. Let's talk about local.
Yeah.
So local, I think there's several big issues that come into play. Homelessness. And sober homes are at the top of the list, and including the airport noise here. That would be a very close third that tends to come up. The homelessness issue is one that's near and dear to my wife and I. When we were in our 20s, we saw the plight of families, homeless families. They lose their home. Excuse me. Let me rephrase that. They lose their job. Then they eventually lose their home.
They're one bill away from losing.
Yep, you got it. They lose the house. They stay in a hotel until they run out of money. Then they live in their car. And at that point, they give it up and go to a shelter. But what happens, and still happens today often, is that the family is divided. The father and the older boys are sent to the men's shelter, and the women and the kids are sent to the women's shelter.
Which a lot of people don't know.
And we know, as we see on our southern border right now, separating families when all they have left is each other is just bad policy.
Well, it's the largest demographic of increasing demographic of homelessness is actually families.
Exactly.
Which most people think is just single men.
Right.
In fact, it is. And when you don't have the facilities to do that, you're perpetuating the problem.
Right. And the vast majority of people who are homeless, this is not a lifestyle decision, as Dana Rohrabacher has said. They are they need help. And there's probably
it's a hand up, not a handout.
Exactly. And there are some that certainly have mental challenges or physical challenges that represents the inadequacies in our health care.
Right.
But most of the folks that are homeless want to get back into being good citizens in society.
You know, I'm reminded by something that a gentleman by the name of Bruno Serrato, Chef Bruno, from the White House in Anaheim, he was on the show, and we were talking about this, and he actually feeds kids. He has I'm not going to even try to remember because
Katarina's Club.
He feeds something like 3,000 kids a day at one hot meal, Right. And then
because they started showing up at the back, these motel kids, and he said, I can't turn them away. And then he turned it into this giant charity.
Well, his mother basically made him do it. But let's not go there. Right? She did. She made him do it. Yeah. And Bruno will tell you she made him do it. And he loves having done that for his mom. But he then took it then one step further because he realized that even though it's a two working parent family, they're still living in a motel. Okay, the child that's trying to basically excel in school, the only quiet place for them to basically do their homework is to sit on that toilet and use the back of the tank basically as a desk, right? And they can't put together enough money to get out of the motel because there's a first and last that they need to do. So he basically then extended his nonprofit's reach to where on occasion every few months or something they will try to transition a family out of a motel by paying that first and last. So again, you know, people are and on razor's edge from one bad medical bill. The other group that's the largest group of homelessness is not young. It's the elderly. You know, everything that they basically their needs are, and if they haven't basically right. saved enough, you know, for their latter life. So
why are you looking at me as you have that discussion?
Right? I'm not really. My eye just wanders around. Okay.
Hey, Rad, but, though, you really hit on an important topic there, and that is the number one driver, one of the number one drivers of homelessness in our country is the inability to pay your medical bills.
Exactly.
And it's and I'll share
it's
this.
Unconscionable.
It is. And I want to share the story with you that really emphasizes that most people that are homeless are just looking for a hand up. I was at Colette's home for homeless families here in Huntington Beach. And this woman comes in while I'm meeting with Billy O'Connell. And
he's been in here too. Great Irishman.
A handshake that'll crush the bones in your hand.
And the brogue that makes me want to grab a Guinness and immediately.
No kidding, right? And do a shot of whiskey with him. And but we're sitting there talking. This woman comes in, and she looked like she's coming from the advertising industry because she has that big leather portfolio. Mm-hmm. And she sits down, and she goes, Mr. O'Connell, you don't remember me, but you allowed me and my daughter in here about 10 years ago. And I had been in the real estate industry. I was in a title insurance business. I was doing well, but the real estate market collapsed in 2008. I lost my job. I was diagnosed with a medical condition, but I didn't have medical insurance. Ran through all the money and ended up being homeless with my daughter. And you guys brought us in. She opens up this portfolio, and she pulls out her graduation diploma from Duke University, a certificate of being one of the top 10 athletes in the ACC, and going on to Oxford now to study further, and making it very clear that she would not have be here today
if
she didn't have that hand up. And it emphasizes that there's a lot of stories like this. They just want a hand up. But better yet, let's figure out a society and a support system.
Where people don't have to find themselves in that position to begin with.
You got it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's what I mean by unconscionable, because we as a society should not allow things to get to that point where we now have to fix this. There's no reason for it to be there. You know, we do preventive and proactive thinking all day long. We do it when we try to think what we're going to invest in, what we're going to basically friggin' buy groceries for the next week for. I mean, you pre-plan.
Right.
Okay? Why is it that when it comes to certain issues like that are so critical...
Exactly.
...that we don't do that?
And it's funny, because in talking to more conservative friends who mm-hmm. think that universal health care carries a large expense for American taxpayers, I point out to them, you're already paying for universal health
care. You're actually paying more.
In the least efficient way possible.
Absolutely.
You're paying for it when people get to the emergency room instead of preventatively and having a system in place.
If we have less people getting sick,
exactly,
then we wouldn't have as much cost.
Right.
And there's stuff we can do about that. This is not, you know, brain surgery. There are things and steps that we could put into place to at least try to minimize, not necessarily eliminate, but minimize that negative impact. And that goes with homelessness, that goes with medical expenses, it goes with all this stuff. It's just whether there's the willingness to do it.
Exactly. And there's roughly 40 industrialized developed countries in the country, in the world. And of those 40 industrialized developed countries, only one does not have universal health care. It's the United States of America. Yet we spend twice as much of on GDP than those other countries. We're at 18.5%. They're roughly at half that. And they have better metrics on health results. So we know our system's broken. We've got to fix it.
And I'm not picking at all, you know, having to make a choice between one or the other. I have total respect for the military. I know a lot of people that are in the military. I think patriotism is very important. And I would support everybody who's in the military and basically being equally of civic service in their own fashion. But when you look at the fact that we didn't blink an eye to basically approve a ridiculously high price on military expenditure. But we have this dragged out fight, clawing, holding on to everything when it comes to things like medical bills and health care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where's our priorities?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because
70 million people are baby boomers. 70 million people of this population of this country, I'm not even looking beyond the borders, that are basically going to come into the reality of the fact that they don't have enough money saved aside to basically see themselves through their longer years of aging.
Right.
And we're basically putting our priority as a country basically spending more on jets. I mean, a fraction of that would make an unbelievable difference in some of these core critical things that we have suffered from for so long. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm the next in line, okay? Millennials that are thinking they're not subject, they're coming up right after, and there's more of them than there are baby boomers.
Right.
You don't kick the can down the road, because the can just gets bigger.
Right. And I think that's the challenge our country is having right now. We're not having that discussion regarding what is most important. And all these ideas are important, but we also have to set priorities. And I talked earlier about how important higher education is.
Absolutely.
And if we have the smartest kids in the world, we win on the global platform. The cost to educate every 18-year-old in America in a nonprofit university or mm-hmm. a trade school mm-hmm. is $80 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
So the lower quartile, just to educate the lower quartile, is $20 billion a year. The tax plan that was just passed will cost us $40 billion a year in
yep.
current interest costs. Where's our priority?
What was the recent calculation on the price of the for the wall?
$18 billion.
Okay, so there is
right, yeah, and so it's just a question of looking at what's most important to our long term wow. security and safety. And I would propose that having the brightest kids in the world
yeah.
is certainly a key component of making sure we have the future we want for our kids, our grandkids, and the safety, security, and stability we expect in our country.
You know, Harley, let me just say something like this, because some people are probably listening to this and going, "Oh, you know, you're just liberal Democrats." Let me explain something to somebody. The only party I was ever registered to was the Republican Party. I abandoned the Republican Party over almost 15 years ago because I saw that fiscally conservative, socially liberal component as a Californian Republican, okay, in living in the furthest south part of Orange County in San Clemente, okay, that party did not represent that for me anymore. Okay, and I can list one name after the other of people that are lifetime Republicans that have basically come to the same exact conclusion, including people that are sitting in friggin' Congress that are talking about possibly leaving the party. It isn't about that. It's not about, there's nothing fiscally conservative about wasting money and not solving the problem with universal health care. You don't get to claim fiscal conservatism and basically then waste money. That doesn't work that way. I don't care what your reasoning behind it is.
Well, we have that in common. I'm a recovering Republican as well.
There you go.
I left the Republican Party around that
same
time.
How do you get to even be a successful business person if you basically are driven by wasting money? You don't.
Exactly. And I'll go back to what I said earlier. Most Americans are between the 20-yard lines. They are socially progressive and fiscally responsible, and that's what we expect from our elected leaders.
Can I just interject?
Yeah, you've been trying to ask a question.
I sit in this chair every day for 5 years and listen to a wide range of
people. You should get up more often.
I should. These are the jokes, folks. He's here all the week. Okay.
We'll let him out to use the bathroom.
One of the things that really shocks me, and I don't know why it doesn't get any coverage, is that in an age when we are completely polarized, two alternative truths for every issue, two divisive ways of looking at everything. There is one topic, at least in this county, which every time they come in unites people, and that's homelessness. We've had the most conservative city council people come in here and say, we got to change it. We had the new director for United Way. They've got a whole task force and vision of how they can bend the homelessness curve. Billy O'Connell, who's a city councilman for Huntington Beach, I'm assuming he's a Republican, but I don't know if he is or isn't, runs a thing called Colette's Children Home, Healing Homelessness. Business people are behind it because it's bad for business. Progressives are behind it because we're leaving people behind. Churches are behind it. Both parties are behind it. Why can't we grasp that as an opportunity to bring us together?
There's too many special interests. There's too many people that actually make money
off of homelessness
on the fact that there are issues that need to be resolved. The crazy thing is, I wish they would resolve them. because there's no money in resolving them either. If I can keep the problem, and if I resolve the problem, I have no reason for existence anymore. My job is now basically redundant, right? But the problem is that there's going to always be other problems that we address. We should get our head out of our proverbial, you know, Netherlands, basically. Okay, no picking on the Dutch, by the way. But basically, we have issues that need to be addressed, to Harley's point, in a rational, logical way that makes sense, and importantly, sustainable sense. That this isn't something we're going to come back in next 4 years, you know, election cycle. Now we're going to have an issue that we can run on again, right?
So let me ask you,
solve the problem, do your job, go there, and that's exactly why we elect people. They're supposed to go there and do a job, not
so
basically sit there and keep
is an opportunity from my perspective to bring both sides together, because everybody
as
seems
long
to
as
be
the motivation. Sorry, Paul, I'm jaded a little bit on this because no. As long as there's the motivation to actually take action, because we have been sitting on how much $118 million basically at the supervisor level or something.
Right.
Some ridiculous, stupid thing like that, while we've had people basically on the Santa Ana Riverbank.
Well,
I mean,
they can't decide, did they build one big shelter or lots
well,
of
then
little
those
shelters?
If they can't make a decision, in corporate America, you can't make a decision, you find yourself out of a job. You don't basically
Brad,
continue.
I think you're right. I think
it's not the Peter principle of being, you know, like, you know, promoted to the level
right,
of incompetence.
I want to hear Harley's position.
Well,
on this
there's three sources of money here. You just outlined one, which is the county supervisors have a chunk of money. The state also has a chunk
yeah.
of money. And the federal government has programs that are dedicated to addressing these issues too, but you certainly need somebody running HUD that's equally dedicated to making sure those monies are distributed.
People willing to have courageous conversations and actually take action.
Right. And so you need to look, you've got these three pools of money, and you need to get the folks around a table and come up with solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the issue is. The issue is not that we have a problem or that we have the money. The question is, how do we spend the money to solve the problem? And that's where they need to sit.
But
in
so many
Harley,
issues,
if I've got $100 million on to deal with the homeless problem, if I spend $50 million on consultants, I only have $50 million
yeah,
to deal
well,
with
you
the
got
problem.
It.
Okay,
right.
It's I see this happen all the time. Like
you're
you know,
right.
The city set aside money for a public park, and
you're
they basically
the great park
you know, they,
again here,
yeah, and they basically say, "Well, we got $1 million to put in this park," and they sell it to the community, and oh my God, I can't wait for those soccer fields to come in, and then I spend you know 3/4 of that basically on consultants, and then I wish I have a beautiful report, but I can't make it happen. See, to me, that is irresponsible and it's incompetent, more so than irresponsible. It's incompetent because if you are tasked to get something done, that is the goal, not put every step along the way and then find yourself in a situation where you go, oopsie, I tried, but I couldn't make it happen.
I'm just pointing out that there is
an
issue.
And you
don't
get to hold that job if that is what you do. Sorry.
Somebody deflate this guy. He's wound up. I'm just pointing out that when we think there's nothing we agree on in the society anymore, there's one that both left and right, business and activists, churches and
as long as they take action, otherwise
just
it's just
there's an
talk.
There's an interest, but there's an interest there beyond. You can argue about whether there's an interest.
Every 4 years, we get on podiums and we talk about all the stuff we're going to do, and then
know,
for the next 4 years, we do
I'm
nothing
just
about
there's
it.
There's an opportunity there.
Yeah, I do think too. There's an opportunity because sometimes what bogs these processes down is that. Everybody is looking for the silver bullet that collectively
There's
solves
no
the problem.
Bullet.
There is no silver
Roll
bullet.
Roll up your sleeves and do some work.
And your idea of what solves it and my idea might be different. So
yeah.
Here's an idea. Let's try, as you would in the business world, beta test. You would do small tests with multiple ideas and see which ones work best and then continue to fund those and build those bigger.
You know, I was part of Orange County Coast Keepers. We did a beta test of kelp reforestation. In Crystal Cove.
Kelp? Like the
kelp reforestation in Crystal Cove.
Right. Yeah.
What was motivated by it, and I didn't know. I just was involved. I scuba dive, and I liked the fact that, oh, this is cool, you know. And the program basically used incubators in schools, and they had the kids basically shock the kelp and germinate it. And then basically we had a contractor give us, like, rubber bands and tiles, and we would plant them in there. That was the beta test area was basically Crystal Cove. What I didn't realize at the time is what motivated that and what drove and provided some funding for it was the fact that it was a mitigation measure against San Onofre. And when that basically succeeded, they populated huge kelp forests of the coast of San Clemente. There's an largest artificial reef of the coast of San Clemente. There's now a thriving recreational fishing situation going in there, right? And to your point, yes, we don't take on that we're going to basically fix the whole area next to San Onofre, but we can be smart about it and do a beta test.
Right.
I got to do a beta test and run a couple of ads. Normally the show ends in an hour, but you're on a hot roll. And today, this week, we don't have Checkout California, so we'll extend a little longer if you guys want to go. But I got to run some commercials.
Run some ads.
Stick with me, and we'll come back with more with Harley Ruda, running to be a disruptor here in the 48th Congressional District.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
Isn't being discussed.
All right, let's come back. I got to insert my. I know this isn't my show, but I got to insert one question that I find myself flabbergasted.
You insert questions on something that's not your show.
I know. Trump recently said,
3.5 years, ladies and gentlemen,
we're going to open up offshore drilling everywhere in the country except Florida, because he knew that that would kill their Rick Scott's chances of winning the Senate seat there.
He just doesn't like California, man. That's why he said,
well,
let's drill off the coast
that
of California.
Too, but my point is, that should be, that was such a contentious issue. When I came here in the 80s, we had offshore drilling, and we had Santa Barbara oil spills, and everybody, left, right, said no more, just like in Florida and other places. And particularly since we have more oil than we've ever had with fracking and with oil sands and all these other things, the need isn't there. Nobody was asking for this. And it seems like an issue that we unite everybody in the left and the right. We had the National Resource Defense Council in here, and they were talking about all this stuff. And I said, I'm going to tell you, we've had lots of candidates like Harley in here from both sides. We had lots of politicians and political groups. Nobody is talking about this. If I went up and down the hall right now and said to people, do you know they're talking about offshore drilling again here? Not one of them would be even aware of it nor support it. Why isn't that a unifying, huge issue here in this county?
Are we in denial that this is even an issue
that
we should be worried
about? And I'll interrupt. We had the mayor of Irvine, Councilwoman, Diane Dixon in here?
Mm-hmm. Newport
Beach. And I asked her that off the air, and she said, oh, they're just talking about it. That's not really going to happen. When Trump says this stuff, you know, the typical defense, he doesn't really mean that. He means it. And I don't know why everybody isn't up in arms, we're all just asleep at the wheel.
You've asked a question, so, yeah. Harley?
I think that's part of the challenge with having Dana Rohrabacher as our representative, is that he has flown under the radar. And he is on record as saying not only does he want to see more offshore drilling here in California, in Orange County, but he wants to see Orange County be first on the list. And this district represents 80% of the coastline of Orange County. And I have yet to meet a Republican, let alone a Democrat, who wants to see more offshore drilling off of our beautiful coastline.
Right.
So not only should
that's
we
why
not,
we live here.
Well,
how do you
equate offshore drilling with property values not taking a hit? I mean, as simple as that, right?
Right, exactly. And the idea that it's good for the fish, which is what he said, is simply not true.
Offshore drilling is good for the fish?
The platform attracts fish.
The platform attracts fish.
That's what he said.
Do we have to drill the oil and just put the platform in there?
Wow. Yeah. That's a shout out to Nancy Caruso, who actually handled the Orange County Coast Keepers. Do you think, Nancy, if you're listening, could you call in basically and tell me, does the platform attract fish? She's working on an abalone restoration right now.
But again, I'm wondering why this hasn't caught fire, why nobody's talking about it, and why the general public doesn't either know it or believe it. It's real.
I think it's two things. One, as you guys talked about earlier, we need people engaged in the political process. So if you're not engaged in the political process and you only step up and vote when it's time to vote without really exploring the history, the voting history, and the positions that candidates and incumbents have, then you're potentially making votes based on political affiliation.
See, but it's an insidious circle.
It
really is an insidious circle, right? In order for somebody to be an engaged voter, okay, we have the luxury of time. We are able to take that engagement that we want to be engaged and actually explore things from different perspectives, formulate deductive reasoning, okay? Put that on. But if somebody is saddled with student loans, with basically barely having to hold two jobs to basically make it happen. Non-affordable housing. I mean, oh my God, I said the word affordable housing. Yes, it's the kids that are born and raised in Orange County in those affluent communities that cannot start their lives in those affluent communities because we don't have a transitional way for them to stay there and participate and give back to their communities that they were born and raised in. Affordable housing, cost of medical costs, student loans, if you're saddled with all that, where are you going to find the time to be engaged?
Much less worrying about the Kardashians.
About
I got to worry what the Kardashians are doing.
I mean,
this
you have to be
too.
The most like the most powerful human being on the planet to be able to set all that aside and still be engaged and find time to be engaged in the political process.
I don't believe that, and here's why. You and I talked before we started the show here how all of us hold our handheld and our hands are always very close to us, that we are on the small screen all the time. And whether we are watching watching or listening to entertainment or educational information, we're doing that. In addition, all of us are interacting with our peers and our friends through social media applications. Yeah. All right, get educated. Get educated on the topics. Educate your friends. Educate your peers. Make sure that they know it's time to vote, that they're educated on the topics, and that they are taking a stand for their country in the direction they want to see.
And I thank you for that, Harley. I didn't mean it in a negative way, but I did.
I know you did. I appreciate the softball.
And I softballed it because this is what you get all the time. Oh, I have so much going on, I can't take the time. Okay, you've got a friggin' phone in your hand, okay? You know that you're listening to the echo chamber.
Right.
Okay? Step outside the echo chamber for a minute. It's as easy as your phone, right? And there is no excuse anymore to not be engaged, because if you don't make sure you have a seat at the table, do not be surprised if you find yourself on the menu.
Exactly, and I love that line. That's a famous line. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
You're on the menu.
Exactly.
And so you can whine, you can complain, and you know it's like the same as somebody who doesn't vote. If you don't vote, don't come to me a day after election and basically say, I have a problem. You didn't vote. You didn't participate.
Can I tell you guys something shocking, and you'll both argue with me and say, no, you're wrong, but I'm just giving you
you're wrong.
Anecdotal evidence of sitting here day after day and listening to mostly business people come in here and talk. And I, like you, am wound up. I can't believe anybody doesn't see this as a critical election here and a critical turning point. But I'm telling you, the majority of people who come in here and I start saying anything about it, say, shut up. I'm tired. I'm tuned out. I'm not voting. I don't care. I'm not interested. Doesn't make a difference. These are not just uneducated or busy people.
If you don't get engaged.
No, I'm telling you, but there's we are so burned out of this raging fire that many people are simply turning it off.
Then step out of the way and let those who are not participate.
I fear that the blue wave may not be as big as people do, because so many people are just stepping out of the process and saying, I can't listen, I'm tired, tune it off, I don't care anymore. We actually had somebody come in here, one of our show hosts, who's very successful business. He said, the greatest moment of my life is when I decided I'm never going to vote again. I don't care, I'm not interested, it doesn't change anything, I quit. I'm telling you, there are more frightening to me than you guys think. I'm just telling you, they walk in every week here and they say, I quit. I don't care if it's Harley or Dana, I'm out.
Yeah, but
that's just sad. That's sad. Because
that's really sad.
You look at what our founders and every man and woman who has shed blood in the service of our country for our freedom and our democracy and our ability to vote. Not only do you have the right to vote, I think you have the obligation to vote. And that means getting educated as to what the issues are and serving your community.
I was born in another country. I grew up in another country. I came here at an age where I was conscious of what I was doing. And, you know, as a family, we basically legally immigrated. And I remember the first thing I had to do, which was kind of interesting, is I had to, you know, register for Selective Service, right? You have no idea, unless maybe you have had a reference point of not being in a situation where you have the right to vote. You have the ability to exercise that right. It is not just a right. It's like all those people that I have the right to bear arms. I have to. You also have the responsibility. You don't get you don't get to call the right without the responsibility.
Exactly.
The two go hand in hand.
And if you look at the 2016 presidential election, sure, somebody can say, I don't like either candidate, so I'm not going to vote.
Right.
Well, you're not going to vote for them. That's fine if that's where you concluded.
But don't give up the process.
There's 50 to 100 things on the ballot. Are you telling me you can't find one thing that's important to you?
Yep.
No. I'm just telling you, I'm warning you all, based on what I see on the ground here, there's an awful lot of people that are exhausted and burned out and tired of the noise and the fighting, and they don't want to hear any of it.
But you know what, Paul?
Right.
Paul, that's true, and I'm not taking that away from you, but there's also glimmers of hope.
Yeah.
And the glimmers of hopes are in the things like the ridiculously unbelievable positive increase in people that are kids in school that are pre-registering at the age of 17.
Yes.
Right.
They can't wait to vote.
Who was the kid you had?
Yeah, they're coming back in. Jackson and Jake. And they're bringing in two other candidates. I mean, they've got the Orange County Students for City Council that have identified certain seats in City Council. This is local. This is not at a national level. These are kids that are rolling up their sleeve and saying, I want to be part of what is makes my communities better in the future at the age of 18, 19, 20. Okay? And they've got people running from Fullerton to Buena Park to San Clemente to Costa Mesa. Okay? If you can't see that as a positive wave and a future positive, and all you're looking at is the people that don't want to be engaged anymore, you're missing half the story.
Well, here's two glimmers of hope that are actual statistics. So in the 48th District, the 2014 midterm, which is comparable to the 2018 midterm, not a presidential midterm, the 2014 midterm, 95,000 people voted. In this last primary on June 5th, we expected a little bit of a surge. We expected about 105,000, 110,000, maybe 120,000, 175,000 people voted. Wow. That was more than in the primary of the presidential election.
Yep.
So people are engaged. They're coming out. The other glimmer of hope, statistically speaking, is what happened in Virginia. Virginia, in their state elections and for governor, they do it in off years. So in 2017 versus 2015, here's what happened. And this is in the millennials, and that's what we were just talking about, the millennials getting engaged, young adults getting engaged in the political process. In 2015, approximately one quarter of eligible millennials voted. We saw that jump to 50% in 2017. What was also interesting is how the party shifted as well. In 2015, it was almost split between Republicans and Democrats. Mm-hmm. In 2017, it was almost two-thirds Democrats, one-third Republicans. So young people have a voice. They have a voice and a voice that should be heard, but you can only be heard if you vote.
Let me add just one other reality change to the political spectrum is you can't be playing only to your base. You look at the breakdown of voter bases in Orange County, for example, right? And again, I use this because it's, you know, we've been saddled with the label that we're a conservative. We've been saddled with the label of being a conservative county forever and ever and ever, right? If you look at the breakdown, it's almost 30-30-30.
Exactly.
You've got the Democratic Party that's 30% of the registered voters, Republican Party. The Democratic Party has been holding its own, slightly growing. The Republican Party has been shrinking. And you got this middle group of people, of which I am one, that range everything from liberal to staunch, you know, conservative, libertarian. But this group of people have done one thing, because you can say, oh, yeah, you can't count them. Either party can't count them. Yes, but this group of people have done one very strong symbolic thing. They've given up the blue or the red jersey. They've said, I am going to sit here and I'm going to look at issue
and
candidate.
Right.
I'm not going to have blind loyalty. And you're going to have to, each party is going to have to appeal beyond their base to those people in order to basically carry
on. So, my question, we had Neil Kelly in here.
And that's not an easy test, by the way, because both parties have been so entrenched in their mindset and thinking that is sort of tribalistic that you need to, and which to me is a positive, because that causes those parties to have to reach outside their comfort zone. They need to reach out to those other people.
Neil Kelly, the official registrar of the county, says the largest group in Orange County is not Republican, not Democrat anymore. It's refused to state, the independents. Yeah. So how do you reach out to those people? I'm looking at the latest New York Times poll from a couple days ago, which is shocking that the New York Times polled your district here in particular, and it shows dead even, 45-45. You're each energizing your bases. How do you reach out to that group that Rod's talking about?
Very good question, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, the good news is that we won the no party preference in the primary and did a great job, and the polling shows that we are carrying the majority of them now. And we're also carrying quite a bit of moderate Republicans as well. So we are in a good place. You know, we feel confident that as we continue to get our message out there, we'll succeed. Interesting thing, too, in what you were just talking about, the no party preference or decline to state is now the second largest party in California.
Yeah.
Not here in Orange County.
We're not a non-party party.
But the non-party party. The reality is it's probably bigger than that, because we have this jungle primary or top two primary where everybody votes for anybody, regardless of what your party affiliation is and regardless of who's on the ballot, you can vote any way you want.
Right.
There's no need to change your party affiliation. You can mentally change it and you're there. So
There's some people that are still registered one way or the other that actually fall into that category.
Probably in the middle. Exactly. Yeah. That's right. So that middle is probably even bigger than we thought.
All right. Well, we got to wind up. We went a little long here. We wanted to give you an extra chance here. Anything we didn't cover? What do you want? Final statement to us independents out there.
Well, before that, we also want to make sure. I want to make sure that you also, you know, give the people the website.
Yeah, all
of
that.
They can get hold of you guys and find out more. And if there's any upcoming appearances or anything like that that people can participate, or town halls or things like that.
The mic is yours. Use it as you wish.
Sure. Two things. One, go to harleyforcongress.com.
Spell it.
That's our website. HARLEYFOR Congress.com.
All right.
Currently, I am the first Harley in the history of the United States to be foolish enough to run for Congress to get that domain name. But go there. You can also follow us on Facebook and see what's coming up, what events. On our website, you can donate to the campaign. You can sign up. You can volunteer. And second, for those of you listening, you can't see what I can see, but these two guys have a pretty cool collection of Irish whiskeys.
Yes, we do.
And I'm hopeful sometime after November 6th,
we'll come back and celebrate.
You have a celebratory
drink
with you.
You have an open door. You can come in anytime you'd like. We will do that. What was I going to say? Anything that they should be aware of that's coming up? Any particular issues in your district that they should be aware of and educate themselves on?
All the issues are important. The biggest issue they need to be focused on is making sure they're prepared to vote on November 6th, because their country needs you. Everybody, get out and vote.
Make sure you're registered. Make sure that you can go out and do it. It doesn't take that long. It's actually a very enjoyable experience if you haven't done it before. Encourage other people that you know. This is not only just a right, but it's a responsibility.
And
a lot of people all over the planet would wish they had that right to be able to vote.
Exactly.
Will they be continuing? Neil Kelly talked about the innovative programs that they had, where they had off-site early voting. They did it at Mission Viejo City Hall, for example. I don't know in your district if there's any of those pop-up sites. They were going around and not just registering voting, but actually letting people vote. Will we be doing that in a general election, or was that just in the primaries?
I believe so, and I will give a shout-out to Neil Kelly.
Cool guy, good Irish.
I have been told from multiple sources that he is recognized as running one of the best registrars in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
And
right.
Does a fabulous job. And
where the other side says, oh, there's too much fake voting and everything, he's been right. Very adamant about
exactly.
How to protect the sanctity of the ballots and increase the turnout.
I'm going to add just one more layer to anybody who's listening, and a reason for why to go out and vote. I know it's a midterm election, but here's the thing, right? There's a sort of a cliche that says, as California goes, so does the nation. Okay, not only do you have the ability to participate, but you also have the ability to add your voice to what you want to see on the national platform.
Right.
So do not give up on the opportunity of that. Make your voice heard, not only as a person who lives in that district. Vote for your city council. Get involved in the issues. Vote on the ballot issues. But also know that what you are doing is sending a message of what you, as a Californian, want to see on the national platform.
One other thought on this, because
yeah.
I've been doing this for years, and long before I decided to run for office. My wife and I, with our close friends, you get a voter guide. A voter guide tells you everything you're going to be able to vote on, candidates and issues. Get together with your friends with the requirement that
great
everybody
idea.
Has to research one of the issues, and you come and you sit down and you have a debate.
Like a book club almost for politics.
And try and mix it up. Bring in some libertarians, bring in some Republicans, bring in some Democrats. Make sure you've got a good cross-section and have an honest conversation. Then make an informed decision with your mail-in ballot or in the ballot box if you go to a polling booth.
Don't get it. Don't shy away from honest, courageous conversations. We are always better off when we have those discussions than when we don't.
Whole purpose of the show. Thanks for coming, guys.
Harley, thank you so much.
Glad to be here. Yeah. Appreciate it, guys.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.